my friend David reach out to me about a real cool place here in Jonesboro, Arkansas. It's B&B Collections. B&B is located as part of the Treasure Hunt Flea Market at 4012 Southwest Drive. They have all kinds of stuff and specialize in all things nerdy.
But we like the nerdy stuff.
That's right. I dropped by to see some original art, wrestling figures, Funko Pops, comic books, DVDs. They have all things nerdy. Hey, get your nerdy on and visit them. Or if you are not in Jonesboro, Arkansas, you can search on Facebook or add them on Instagram at BBC Jonesboro. That's at BBC Jonesboro. Also do a seller search on eBay, BBC Jonesboro, and they will hook you up.
I can't decide if I want that Darth Vader art. Maybe a Funko Pop.
Stop by and see Brandon or Bo at 4012 Southwest Drive in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Tell them STS Pod sent you, and you'll get 20% off on your total purchase.
Choosing the Shiv Kit is sponsored by SpunkLube.com. SpunkLube is an award-winning personal lubricant that's fun. SpunkLube is available in four varieties: hybrid, pure silicone, natural, and pink. Place your order today at SpunkLube.com and tell them Shootin' the Shit Knit sent you.
Anyone can suffer from recurrent or punctual erectile dysfunction due to stress, fatigue, or medical conditions. Stop feeling bad about it. Have better sex with proven solutions. Blue Chew can now offer you the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis at a fraction of the price, discreetly delivered to your door. Just pick the package that matches your needs and make sure you never get caught off guard at the moment you least want it. Blue Chew will help you gain your confidence back in the most convenient way. No waiting rooms, no appointments required, no embarrassing face-to-face meeting with your doctor. Your online prescription will be approved within 24 hours. You're just minutes away from a heightened sex life. Your performance will be as great as your dreams.
Use promo code STS. STS, get your first month free. All you have to do is pay postage and handling. Now on with the show. Hey, we're live from STS Studios in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and I got waiting in the green room Pro Wrestling Torches? I guess that's the way it's said. Bruce Mitchell. How the hell are you, Bruce?
I'm doing fine. This is quite the green room, man. This is all right. I like the young lady who's been taking care of everything. This is a pretty good deal.
We refer to her as the wife. She's, you know, so that's who she is. I know she would take care of you. So, Bruce, I wanted to bring you on to talk about a bunch of things, and I consider you, man, you're like the Mount Rushmore of kayfabe sheets, you know? One of those guys that's been doing it so long, and that shows our ages here, but you've been part of the kayfabe sheets in kind of the underground, quote-unquote, for a long time, but I don't know. I've been knowing your name. We met a couple of times. I actually saw you at StarCast with me and Lance Levine, talked to you and Wade, but I don't know how did you get started as a wrestling fan? So I want to go all the way back first to talk about Little Bruce and how did he get started as a wrestling fan.
Well, I'm from Durham, North Carolina. So at the end of my high school years, I had a buddy of mine tell me, You know, there's always wrestling here. There was always Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And I remember as a really little kid watching Argentino Apollo and Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen. But I remember in high school I had a buddy of mine say, man, you ought to be watching wrestling. I was like, nah, I don't watch wrestling. And it's like, no, you ought to see this blonde-haired guy. And I'm like, oh, okay. So the blonde-haired guy was Ric Flair. And as it happened, that was the time in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling where Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood and Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine and Blackjack Mulligan and Mass Superstar, I have to throw in Mass Superstar, were really making a lot of money, drawing a ton here in the Carolinas. And for a while, I see the argument years later that we had the best talent in the world. That Jim Crocker Promotions at that time in the late 70s had the best talent in the world. And I didn't know that. Ray Stevens and Jimmy Snuka and all this. I just knew that I liked it. And I was upset. I became obsessed with it. I knew what it was, but I just really wanted to know how it worked and how it did. And I bet it was 4 or 5 years before I met my first buddy who I could like hang out with and talk wrestling with, and that was John Hitchcock. And
oh wow, that's a name, a very familiar yeah. name.
Yeah, so I walked into his comic book store about must have been 83 or 84, and heard him talking about wrestling. I couldn't believe my ears. You know, I was just like, somebody talked about wrestling the way I kind of thought about it, and as far as like didn't believe it was, you know, quite on the up and up, and ended up inviting me to go to some shows. I go to some shows by myself in the Raleigh area, and he was like, you know, come to Greensboro and sit on the front row, and that's all he had to say. Because that was Crocker Promotions with Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen and Midnight Express and Jim Cornette and all that. And I just got further and further into it. And I think I always mark it by when Austin Idol and Austin Idol and Tommy Rich and Paul Dangerly shaved Jerry Lawler's head was my first issue of – that was my – I bought every wrestling magazine I could find, and I ended up sending $5 to Campbell, California, and I bought my first Observer. That was the first issue that came of the Observer, and ended up writing some letters to Dave Meltzer, and ended up working for the Torch, and it's 2019, and I'm still doing this stuff, and I do enjoy
it. You said you really knew it was a work. You know, I talk about going the first time to the matches being front row in Blytheville, Arkansas at a Memphis, Tennessee spy show, and just really knowing it was work, but not really caring.
I didn't care, no, at all. Yeah, I didn't either. I thought it was this really cool thing. I was like, I went to college at UNC Greensboro, and now I live about a mile away from the university, so it's pretty close to the Greensboro Coliseum. But I was just like, this is like the most outlaw, crazy thing, and nobody knows. Nobody knows how good these guys are, you know. And I'd watch, you know, this week we had the NWA Studio Show debut, but I would watch the Crockett Studio Show, and I liked the wrestling just fine, but I loved the promos. I thought those guys could talk more trash, and you know, and I remember really distinctly Ray Stevens. I didn't know that Ray Stevens was an all-time great, but I knew I liked him. I was like, man, you just see that guy drinking in a bar, beating the crap out of somebody.
Right.
And
right.
And he comes up to a fence, and he takes out a tomato, and he shoves it into the fence, and then he pulls it down, and he goes, Jay Youngblood, this is your face. And he's promoting this match in the Greensboro Coliseum. I think it was in Greensboro. Anyway, cage match. And I was just like, you know, and this is your face and the blood coming down. I was just like, I can't believe I'm watching this. I can't believe I'm watching this on Saturday afternoon. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I pretty much still have that opinion.
Great. So I mean, that's we all have. I've had ups and downs, I think, with wrestling, but I think it's been 5, 6, maybe the last 7 years, been following it weekly. Sometimes not as, you know, raw watching it, but really knowing what's going on. What? How did you meet Wade? And I want you to give Wade a message for me, okay? I the reason I don't subscribe is I don't get that colored picture anymore. So, really?
Yep.
How did you and Wade hook up, and how did all this start?
Well, I would go with John Hitchcock and several other people. We had, through crooked means, we had permanent seats on the front row at the Greensboro Coliseum during the heyday of Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen. And you couldn't ask for anything, you know, more fun. And we would, we made it a point. We always rooted for bad guys. And this was before that was really all that cool to do. So there were fans around us who were upset with us. The wrestlers got to kind of know us a little bit. And that was a lot of fun. And so I started writing letters to the wrestling server. I always wanted to be a writer. I thought I could be one. But I never wrote all that much. And so I'd write these letters to the Observer. And that was back when the Wrestling Observer, when the Wrestling Observer letter page was people around the country, including you.
It was us. You, Ernie Santilli, Lance Levine, all those names are people that, in Wade Keller, that were writing letters to the editor. Yeah.
And so, you know, I would get some other newsletters that if Meltzer wrote and said they were good. And one of the ones he always talked about was Pro Wrestling Torch, this kid in Minneapolis that was really doing a good job. And so I remember we started, you know, we would go to all the Greensboro shows. We'd go to a lot of the Dorton Arena shows. We'd just travel around and go to wrestling shows. And my friends and I decided to go to Baltimore because we knew through newsletters that through the Observer, you know, we knew that Sting was going to beat Ric Flair. And Flair was our guy, and Flair and Arn Arn Anderson and a lot of those guys. But anyway, Flair. But it was going to be the end of something pretty big. I mean, pretty obviously that Sting was going to be the next big star in professional wrestling. He was going to beat Ric Flair, and we knew that it wasn't like the travel is now. But we knew that names we knew from the newsletter, like Brian Travel and Ernie Santilli, and you know, a ton John Williams and a ton of people. We're going to be in Baltimore, so we got reservations at the hotel, and we went to Baltimore, drove up there, and that was the first big pay-per-view get-together that I went to. I knew other people were going. You know, I knew there were other ones, but that was a lot of fun, and I met Wade Keller, and I subscribed to his newsletter in the hall of that hotel. And I gave him some cash and a bunch of change so that I could subscribe to the newsletter. And you know, I mean, it was, there was a lot of wrestlers around, Ole Anderson and Jody Hamilton and gosh, who, I mean, there was just a lot of wrestlers around. And that show was a very good show. It was a lot of fun to be at. We went to Sabatino's, which is sort of like the Jimmy Seafood of the day in Baltimore. But Sabatino's was the Baltimore, you know, was the Baltimore Italian restaurant where the wrestlers would eat. And we're like sitting in one table. And here's this table with Lex Luger and the Steiner brothers. And I forget who else, but Flair was in the restaurant. I remember he was just about to step on my foot. And Mark Madden stepped in front of me and just started talking a mile a minute to Ric Flair. And I met Mark there, and it turned out we worked together on the Torch. And, you know, and it wasn't very long after that Wade, who had liked my letters in the Torch, he would have a lot of the Torch letter writers write for him and write columns for him, you know, for free. But it was like, do you want to write these columns? And so I'd write these long ass columns and people liked them. And that's where it started. We've been through weekly newsletters with the, you know, with the, they weren't Polaroids, but with color pictures attached.
Right, right. That's the reason I subscribed the very first time was because I was a Meltzer guy. You know, I was a Meltzer guy. Yeah. There, no one could be better than Dave. And but being so many kayfabe sheets out there, I liked a little bit when it came to news. I liked Dave's stuff. Then when I started reading the torch, I was like, this is so cool. But I'm getting a photograph too, so that's the cool part of it.
Oh, right. Yeah. And it, come on, every, you know, and I can remember like with the Wrestling Observer just waiting by the mailbox. It was just like, you know, you go to work, and I was, you know, I was early 20s. I'd just, you know, gotten out of college and working all the time. And I was like, man, but when that, if that Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, if it came Monday, I was really upset. But if it was like Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, that would always set my, you know, set my wrestling and set my weekend off great. I was just like, this was like what I knew that there had to be something for the people in the business to read with all these different companies around, but I didn't. I had no idea what it was. But gosh, I mean, that was just like that was the end of my buying wrestling magazines. That was all. And you had your sheet too.
Yeah, Wrestling Right. We did that for it, and it was just comedy. You know, it was just comedy.
Yeah. I read yours. I mean, it was I loved all that stuff and just that kind of you know passing on that information, but also that attitude of having fun and making fun of bad wrestling and putting over good wrestling and talking trash and all that. I just enjoyed the community. So
The Observer every week, you remind me of that. Lance says he still gets the paper version. I remember doing the – I had to buy a staple, you know, the thing to get the staple remover because you could not get that damn staple out. And then you had to it was almost a magnifying glass, but I remember the first one I got, and I just couldn't believe it. It had all this information in it. All right, I've got a question about – you said something about fan gathering. We're going to come back. We'll do a quick commercial. We'll come back, and I want you to talk about somebody for me.
Tune the Shiznit is sponsored by SpunkLube.com. SpunkLube is an award-winning personal lubricant that's fun. SpunkLube is available in four varieties: hybrid, pure silicone, natural, and pink. Place your order today at SpunkLube.com and tell them Tune the Shiznit sent you.
This is your bedroom. This is your bedroom with Blue Chew. Blue Chew uses the same active ingredients as in Viagra or Cialis, but now comes in chewable form. Chewable means better, cheaper, and works faster than pills.
I've tried Cialis, I've tried Viagra. Blue Chew works the best. It's a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's definitely gotten the job done.
No in-person doctor visit, no waiting in line. No more awkwardness.
Blue Chew allowed me to have more sexual freedom because it kicked in and worked faster.
Ordering Blue Chew is an absolute no-brainer for any man.
Blue Chew makes my girlfriend, like, want to put up with me in bed.
I felt like I did when I didn't have ED.
Order online to get your first month free.
I want my girlfriend to want me, and with Blue Chew, she really does. Blue Chew is the future of manhood.
That's BLUEChew.com. Promo STS, and you get to try it for free.
Wow.
I hear you.
Wow.
My friend David reached out to me about a real cool place here in Jonesboro, Arkansas. It's B&B Collections. B&B is located as part of the Treasure Hunt Flea Market at 4012 Southwest Drive. They have all kinds of stuff and specialize in all things nerdy.
But we like the nerdy stuff.
That's right. I dropped by to see some original art, wrestling figures, Funko Pops, comic books, DVDs. They have all things nerdy. Hey, get your nerdy on and visit them. Or if you are not in Jonesboro, Arkansas, you can search on Facebook or add them on Instagram at BBC Jonesboro. That's at BBC Jonesboro. Also do a seller search on eBay, BBC Jonesboro, and they will hook you up.
I can't decide if I want that Darth Vader art, maybe a Funko Pop.
Stop by and see Brandon or Bo at 4012 Southwest Drive in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Tell them STS Pod sent you, and you'll get 20% off on your total purchase. All right, back from, we want to thank our sponsors back from commercials. Bruce, I had a request. I need you to tell a Harry White story.
Oh my gosh. If you look at, if you're on Twitter and you see the little notifications that come through, if you're following me, and please do, at Mitchell PW Torch, and you see when it says the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I've been doing the podcast for 14, 15 years now. And it's a picture of me and Wade Keller. We're sitting actually in, I think it's a Hardee's, and it's a, I hate the picture. It's a terrible picture, except for one thing. It's Wade Keller and I, and Harry White was in that picture. And it was taken about 3 years ago in Waterloo, Iowa. And I hadn't seen Harry White for many years. And then there he was in Waterloo, Iowa for the Dan Gable, Luthez, George Tragas Hall of Fame ceremonies. Still just Harry White, you know, the driest wit, the funniest, smartest guy. Oh my God. And so, and that was just like a highlight of the trip. And he passed away before the next Waterloo, Iowa, Hall of Fame. So, that I always think about that picture sitting there. I hate that picture, but I don't complain way too much about it because it's just a connection to Harry White. And I remember Harry White, he was a wrestling fan from the St. Louis, Missouri area, and one of my stories, and just like a really smart, funny guy. So one day I come home from work. I'm a school teacher, so I come home from work, and I don't know what possessed me. I mean, like lots of people, I turn on my television when I come in, and turn on TV, and for some reason, I turned on Jerry Springer, and I swear to God, Brian, I'm not a Jerry Springer fan. I mean, it's like I'm not a regular viewer. I know what it is and all that.
Right,
and
so, right, right.
You know, and I'm like, I turn it on, and they're doing this show about lust in the old folks' home.
Right, right.
And I'm just watching kind of half-assed, and there's this old lady, and she's – a bigger old lady, and she's an old lady. I mean, it's like no two ways about it. And there's two guys that are fighting over this old lady at the old folks' home, and they're fighting over doing the wild thing with the old lady. And one of them starts to talk, and he's very composed, and he's there, and he's, you know, not a bigger guy. He's older, but he's one of those guys that's bald headed and could be any age from, I don't know, 45 to 8 to 70.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
That, you know, like some guys have that look. And I'm looking and I'm like, and he says his name and I'm like, holy crap, that's Harry White. And I'm like, I don't know where Harry White's working at that point. I know he's not in any old folks' home. I know he's not fighting over the sexual favors of this old lady. And I'm like, this is great. Holy crap. And I watch, and Harry gets upset by the other guy, and he kicks his feet. He starts kicking his feet. Like, you know, like I said, this is a regular aged man. You know, he starts kicking his feet, and his shoe comes off and flies off into the crowd. And I'm like, you know, of course, it's Jerry Springer, so nothing gets resolved, nothing. You know, the people are yelling and screaming at and cutting promos on him back and forth. And so I called up Dave Meltzer. I've been friends with him, stayed friends with him all these years, and you know, just to talk wrestling. But the first thing I said is, was Harry White on Jerry Springer? And Dave goes, oh yeah, he sent me a letter about that. He told me something, but I don't know how it worked out. And I'm like, I just saw it. So when I saw that, and then and then ran into him at the hotel in Waterloo. I was just like, I pulled him to the side. And I was just like, you know, and I was just like, man, you don't even have to tell me, but that was the greatest thing I ever saw in my life. And I guess the deal was he got paid $200 an appearance fee and got put up in a nice hotel in Chicago. And they told him what they wanted him to do. And he was like, you know, he'd been involved in independent wrestling in the St. Louis area and wrestling and all stuff. And he knew exactly how to play it, which is just like, it was the most serious situation that he'd ever been in. And made it on there. I was like, but Harry was one of those guys when he would talk to you, he'd just tell you very dryly these stories and you'd fall out. I mean, he had a deadly, like really smart sense of humor. And I remember too, I mean, I feel kind of a way about this. He had some old wrestling books, and I'm one of those guys that I'm sure you and Lance are too. But I'm one of those guys that any kind of wrestling book I get my hands on, I'm going to read it. And he gave me some wrestling books, and I think he knew. I mean, I don't know what exactly the circumstances of his passing were, but I think he must have known. And I look back on that, and I still have those books. But, you know, one of the things about wrestling is you meet these people, and you meet crazy people. You meet some of the dumbest people on the face of the earth. And then you also meet some of the and you meet in between, and then you meet some of the smartest, coolest people you'll ever meet in anything, I think. So it's like – and Harry was one of those types. He wasn't the dumb one. He was the smart one and the cool one. So, yeah, Harry White, man. That's
awesome. I tell you what he did a couple of times with me is like we would do some of the strangest things in Wrestling Riot, and I would always wonder – you know, is it people actually reading this, blah, blah, blah. And we had some fake characters and some dumb crap going on. And he wrote me this, like, a page and a half letter about, you know, about this situation that was going on. And he went right along with the storyline with all his comedy and everything. And I always remember that. And remember him calling and talking. And it was never normal. It was – he'd always had some kind of crazy story. And it was – right before he passed away, I had put on Facebook something about having a frozen shoulder, and he sent me some kind of little joke about a frozen shoulder. Then he said, hey, you know, you're going to get two just to let you know, blah, blah. And he went through detail and just the sweet Harry White is what I remember always was. And I just, that's the last memory I'll have of him because he wasn't really, and he probably knew something was going on with himself at the time, but it wasn't about him. It was about me. So just, it was just so funny, man.
The other one I remember real quickly is, went to another pay-per-view get-together in Florida, and he had – you. Harry was this St. Louis wrestling fan. Anyway, he had the Missouri belt. He had the belt that Harley Race, the Missouri State Championship, that somehow he got it from Harley Race, and he's sitting in his hotel room with it. And, you know, now those belts go for just this enormous amount of money, and I don't know – what he did, but back then they didn't. And the St. Louis Wrestling Club, that was such a big deal, you know, it was the Cadillac of professional wrestling promotions, but it had gone out of business in the wake of, you know, all the changes in the business. And there was plates falling off of it, and he had this stuff. And then he had all these canceled checks from Frank Goodish and Harley Race and Ric Flair and I think Rocky Johnson and all this stuff. I was just like, look at this. But yeah, the last person, as far as I'm concerned, the last person that was the Missouri State heavyweight champion was Harry White.
I love that. And so that right there, guys, that was that's news right there. So the last champion was Harry White, whether it's in Wikipedia or not. I love that. I did bring you on also because I think. Well, I got to ask one other question, and maybe we'll get into current news. Man, you're not, and I was that way. There's some wrestlers that absolutely hate me, always have. Some of them we've made up. We're good to go now. But, man, you got two of the most, I think, you know, two characters that are in wrestling that neither one of them watch you at all. So what the hell did you do to Jim Cornette and Vince Russo?
Jim Cornette, I was friends with Jim Cornette, and you know, we, you know, back in the 80s and Midnight Express heyday, we loved the Midnight Express, and my buddies and I, and Stan Lane is, and he'll say this now, he used to say he was from wherever it was, Florida, but he's from Greensboro, and he would go to, you know, and he would, when Midnight Express came, he went to Page High School. And I've talked to people, he's a little bit older than I am, I've talked to people that were in his class in Page High School, and they all look like old guys, and then he looks like Stan Lane. It was just like, right, even back then, it was just like ridiculous. And so one of the people that went to wrestling with us all those times got a job, Casey O'Connor with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And so I went to visit KC and spent a week kind of following Smoky Mountain Wrestling around. And part of it was I was in a car with Jim Cornette, and he talked about bringing in the gangsters. And the gangsters were, they were in Georgia, and he said, like, they can't wrestle a lick, but one of them can really talk. And he was – Smoky Mountain Wrestling, they were promoting in the mountains of Tennessee and North Carolina and a little bit of Georgia and, you know, really mostly Tennessee, and had a – how should we say it? A rural audience. And he was like, they're going to take them by storm. And I was like, I don't know about that, Jim. He's like, oh no, you can never get too much heat. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I wrote this column, and I kind of took that idea and pushed it as far as I could fictionally about never getting too much heat. And what I really did was I took the gangster characters and had them get over on every white person in the Smoky Mountain Wrestling promotion, including some of the women I'd met. I checked with those women and like asked them, are you okay with this? And they're like, yeah, man, we liked it. You know, all this. What I didn't know was you can get too much heat, and you can get too much heat with Jim Cornette. And I thought he wouldn't be all like crazy about it, but I thought it would, you know, I didn't think it'd be that bad. I just thought, well, he'll see my point, because it's such an exaggerated point. And he did. And I remember I went to a Smoky Mountain Wrestling house show or TV taping or something, and I came home and the phone rang, and I picked up a phone, and you, honest to God, you have not lived until you've been cursed out by Jim Cornette, because like the paint on my on the walls where I lived was like peeling off. It was so shocking and so incredible, and Jim Cornette, you know, I knew him and I liked him and I liked what he did, but what I didn't know about him or understand was when you get on his bad list, you stay on that bad list. You stay, and I've stayed forever, and I've understood it in the sense of that's how he is. And I've had, you know, I've been to different shows and different conventions, sort of like StarCast. It didn't happen to StarCast, but I've been to things, and he's been there, and we never spoke because he just cussed me out again. But it was also, you know, kind of understood between the two of us, as long as I didn't put him on the spot, he wasn't going to cause this big scene. He didn't, you know, he was professional enough and smart enough to know not to. And it made for some weird things that I have these friends go, well, you know, you and Jim Cornette, you have a lot in common. It's really a shame that y'all don't get along. And have you thought about approaching him? I'm like, I know him. I know enough about him that it's not going to change. It just is what it is. Leave him alone. And inevitably my friends would go up to him to him behind a table and they'd ask him and then you know, I'd say don't bother him, and then they wouldn't pay any attention to me. They'd go and ask him and talk to him, and then they come back and describe to me how Jim Cornette wants to see me die. You know, and Cornette's got a great imagination, so it was like, you know, I was like, I told you to leave him alone. So yeah, it came up at the Crockett Cup that Bill Corrigan in the NWA promoted. Someone on Twitter tried to instigate some stuff, and it worked. I mean, he went off, and so we kind of went back and forth a little bit. But I really appreciate his talent, his knowledge. I've learned a lot from watching him. And then this is a side of him that's no fun, but it is how he is, and he's like that with Vince Russo. And I know he hates Vince Russo worse than he hates me, but I mean, he's got a whole list of people, and I've been told that, you know, at times that I'm way down the list because, you know, it happened 20 some years ago. You know, it happened 25 years ago, and then Vince Russo is just.
You know, just the thing about Jimmy's, I didn't know you even had heat with him until he said something, I think it was on Twitter, about Smoky Mountain and you did this. And I was like, wait, when was Smoky Mountain? You know, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I could see you pissing him off now, but, you know, and the people I had heat with.
I didn't mean to. I mean, I really, but although I was real, because I thought it was a pretty bad thing to set up. A couple of, you know, the famous quote was that, and this was after New Jack had made that quote. New Jack, by the way, is from Greensboro. I mean, he's from around here. He lives here now. And New Jack made the famous quote of, hey, OJ, you know, two down, a world to go, great job, or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
So, you know, it was set up for, and this is how it went in the storyline. It was set up for the gangsters to come in, for Cornette to turn, and turn good, and, you know, the two of them to cut promos back and forth. And I was like, that's a little – and it turned out not to be a good thing for his business. And I was like, that's not a good idea. You know, it's like that's a little much. And I'm from the South, and, you know, pushing those buttons, I know how that works, and I know what can come of it. So yeah, but anyway, that was – you know, I dealt with that for many years, and then, you know, just kind of following the business and going – forth with it. But I always have mixed feelings about Jim Cornette. I don't, but I'll never hate him. I mean, it's like, just because there was so much I learned from watching him, and there was just so much entertainment I got and still do get from him. So, at times, but that side of him, well, I don't think that was known. And now that side of him is almost everything known about him. You know, it's like, let's wind up Jim Cornette and watch him cuss out Donald Trump, or watch him cuss out somebody at the Wendy's, or watch him cuss out Vince McMahon or whatever, or Vince Russo or whatever it is. And Russo was more just writing, you know, just covering the guy from the time that he, he was another newsletter guy. He had a newsletter and was helping support a radio show in New York City during the steroid trial and during the during the Ring Boy scandals, and basically sold out his newsletter and his partner John Arezzi so that he could get a job with the WWE magazine, and, you know, kind of rose through that. I knew all about that, so I'd write about him as things would come up. And he wrote a four-page article about me in the WWE magazine. It has Sable on the cover in the WWE magazine.
Oh, wow.
And with pictures of him in a fourth grade classroom, because I said, I was a school teacher then. I said, well, you know, Russo, not the best writer I ever saw. And I just said, you know, this guy would have a hard time passing the – no, I said he couldn't pass a fourth grade writing test. And he didn't like that. And so he wrote this long screed. He didn't put my name in it, but everything else was, you know, clearly – about that. And so covered him over the years and the back and forth, and, you know, all the failures he's been a part of, and all the failures he's been there. And he's not, you know, he's a guy that doesn't learn, and he doesn't and he's very thin skinned. So, you know, when it would come up, I would hear about him, or hear from him. Someone would tell me, or I'd get him, you know, get an email or something. And so, not one of his favorites, and to the point where, got mad about something I said on a podcast. Cause he does a podcast about how wrestling podcasts are terrible, called Castrating the Marks, and
right.
Something or another. And, he got so mad, he went and painted a picture of me.
That was my next question. What the hell?
It's a horrible painting. Like, I mean, I should be dead according to that. to that, but still, I just like, you know, doing this stuff, you never know what's going to happen next or how people are going to react to this. And it's going to sound like everybody's hated me. And I've had some great compliments over the years and heard from some famous people in a great way and all that and some cool stuff. But, you know, this guy sat there and painted my portrait and, you know, and drew the bags under my eyes and all that.
Just really strange. I thought it was strange. I thought the painting was strange. I thought the whole deal was strange. That's at the point to where I occasionally listen to Cornette, occasionally listen to Russo, but I just quit completely listening to Russo because I said, there's something special going on here that I just don't get, and it's just totally weird. So let's quit talking about people that hate you, but I had to ask you those questions.
Okay, yeah.
So tell me something. We just had one of the biggest weeks probably in pro wrestling history in the last, would you say, 20, 30 years, how's in your mind? What do you see a year from now? We don't usually talk about
that.
You know.
The question. I mean, that is like that's the big question because, you know, that SmackDown show on Fox on last Friday, that's the biggest. You know, that show is the biggest platform that a wrestling company in the United States has ever had in the history of wrestling. I mean, it is a huge platform. And then we've got a new company, AEW, that's well financed and smart, you know, smartly done. And even the first two of the weekly shows, I've come across with the feeling, yeah, this is the first time I've seen something that looked like a company that was breaking across wrestling through popularity. The you know just had that feeling of heat and all that we hadn't had since I think since Nitro started, since Scott Hall walked out into that wrestling ring for WCW. I mean, it's just it's pretty amazing. But it's also there's I counted up 14 hours of national wrestling shows and you know you've been a fan long enough. We remember the when it broke loose in the 80s and you know UHF stations across the country. Some of them had like six or seven territory shows and including WWF and WCW and all this stuff. But wrestling was popular enough that it was getting ratings to like do that for at least a year or two. And this is. All this is because all the hours we're seeing now is because these content platforms need content and they need ratings that people watch live. You know,
it's all about live television, right?
It's all about live television.
Yeah.
But there's not this big boom in wrestling. I mean, WWE has been pretty stale as far as their attendance, as far as their ratings, and they've lost a significant part of their audience. And part of it's because their shows are just really hard to watch in certain ways, and it's hard. And you have to have been a fan and know what the Montreal Screwjob is from years ago to really understand a lot. And that's not the only part of it, to really like kind of make any kind of sense of the show. So it means a lot of new fans don't go on the show, you know, don't get hooked by wrestling or anything like that. So in a year from now, best I can tell, we're either going to be in a wrestling boom that has something to do with somebody on one of these major national shows on these networks breaking out like a Stone Cold Steve Austin or like a Hulk Hogan or, you know, just someone that and it would have to be a newer – I don't think it can be a Roman Reigns, for example, someone that's been around for several years. It would have to be a new act that leads a wrestling boom again. And now, you know, it's so much more about brands than it is about the big star wrestlers. But it would take a big star wrestler for that to happen. Or people are going to be saturated up to their eyeballs with, you know, good wrestling, bad wrestling, and everything. And – there's going to be, you know, if you can like see all this wrestling on your television, how many people are going to want to go to house shows? They already have trouble drawing the house shows across the board. And how many are going to want to travel like they do now? And it could be the wrestling business goes into a hole that's driven by too much content, too much free content. And then just technology. I was so thrilled to get my first, and I bought it, for a ridiculous price. Yeah. My first just tape with highlights, and I remember I got New Japan with Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask, and I got Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen was on it. But the major thing I wanted was and it was terrible looking, like Six Generation stuff. The major thing I wanted was Ole Anderson's turn on Dusty Rhodes in Georgia. And I got these, and I started getting tapes, and also people started sending me stuff, but VHS tapes through the mail. And it was like, I got on the Japanese, on the kick, and I got the shows, but you get them weeks after you read about them in the Observer, and you were lucky to get them then. And now it's like you spend a little bit of $9 a month or a little bit of money, and you can find everything in the world through technology.
Yeah, it's the business evolves because it has. I mean, it's constantly evolved because of television first, VHS, and it just evolves because of this on demand, just like television is. And I had a conversation with a friend today. He said, he wasn't too impressed with AEW, blah, blah, blah. And I said, it's live television. Live television is not one of those, and everything else is dropping. I mean, The Walking Dead had one of its worst ratings ever, the worst ratings ever this past Sunday. So it's, everybody's watching stuff on demand. Like you said, they have it. What surprised me just today, looks like we had the NWA Power Hour, whatever you want to call it. It's a quarter of a million views so far.
Yeah, I heard that today, and I watched it on Tuesday, and folks our age like grew up with studio television wrestling, so I was like, yeah, I'm watching this, and I wish I could have gone to the taping, and I remember I was watching on Facebook, and it was like 3,000 people watching, and so that means they also had it on YouTube, and then it also means in 40 hours it came up to that quarter million. There's all these platforms and ways to deliver your content, and like you said, the ratings of I'm like everybody else, and you got people watching on Netflix and all that. You watch on your own time, and you watch want to watch, and you watch across the board, and unless it's ACC basketball or maybe some football and wrestling, I'm not watching it live. I'm gonna set something up so I can see it when I want to see it, and that's
why wrestling is so valuable now. That's what made it so valuable, and that's what's going to give AEW the chance maybe in 3 years if they continue a solid rating, because TNT TNT doesn't have a show that gets that kind of rating, so that's a cool thing. Hey, man, I want to thank you for
hunger right now for wrestling. That's just wrestling. That's good guys versus bad guys fighting for titles and fighting for grudges, and not so much not the general manager and the behind the scenes and
all this
other stuff. And so I think you were at that first at All In. And that show, that StarCast, and that All In, you're there, and you're just like, people are happy. They're not mad at the wrestling. They're not mad at what they're watching. They're getting that I want to see a fight. It scratched, and so I think there's always going to be a demand for pro wrestling. But where this business is going to be in a year, I don't know. But I'm like, this is one of the most interesting times in 30 years in professional wrestling I've ever lived through. I mean, I've lived through some bad and some good, and it's where everything ends up, I don't know, but I want to see.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, that's one of the us starting a podcast again 3 years ago, me and Lance, and not really knowing all this is going to happen, and everybody else got a podcast too. But it's really fun to be right in the middle. And you used to talk about New Japan. I used to wait, you know, you could watch it, stay up and watch it. And that's a cool thing. But that, I mean, that, and you have to pick what you want to watch. And that's a cool thing too. I want to thank you, Bruce, man. It was fun. Maybe we'll come back in a year's time and we'll see where we're at. Guys, we'll be here same bat time, same bat channel on the best little wrestling podcast in the business. Be there. And as everyone knows, and Bruce don't know this, but I love my mama. Thank you, Bruce.
I'm glad to know that now.
Graphic design is very important. Your logo is the first image potential customers see. What kind of impression would you want to make today? Need a podcast logo or a t-shirt design? KT does art. Her name has become synonymous with quality and professionalism in the graphic design community. She specializes in graphic design, painting, and more. She provides affordable commissions and professional quality with a timely delivery. Contact KT via email at KT_does_art@yahoo.com. Check out her Instagram at Instagram.com/KT_does_art.
That was another great episode of Shooting the Shiznit. Looking for contestants for Who Wants to Be the Best Shizniter Ever? That's right, contact me and be a contestant on Who Wants to Be the Best Shizniter Ever. A big shout out to our sponsors this month. Also, remember, we have a Patreon for only $1. That's patreon.com/shootingtheshiznit without the G. A special thanks to Bob McGee at Pro Wrestling's Between the Sheets, Gene Jackson at Locals2Legends.com, and Sean Garmer at Wrestling to Max website. You can reach me on Comic Book Mark BT on Twitter at BT Shooting the Shiznit on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook with a Shooting the Shiznit Facebook page. We have the Cool Kids Wrestling and MMA Talk Facebook group. If we don't like you, we'll kick you out, but you also have to ask to get in. All the archives are at www.stspod.club. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Spreaker, Spotify, and all the fun podcast players. Podcast Roll Call. A big shout out to Creative Control. Keeping it 100. Memphis Memories with Randy Hales. And my buddies over there at P3 Radio, Max and Josh. Guys, I am Brian Trammell. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. We get it all.